Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Midsters Podcast, your podcast for inspiration on being bold and saying yes to making the most of your midlife. I love this topic. You love every topic. We just like talking with each other.
I think so. But it's not really a buzzword. I think generosity has been around for a long time. And I do like the subject. As we get older, we realize the value in generosity. And I'm not talking about emptying my wallet. It's not that kind of generosity.
That's
good too. Yeah. It definitely is good too. But there's a lot of rewards in the other types of generosity as well. I think when I think of generosity, I want to hear your initial thoughts on it. But the one word that comes to mind is willingness. Mm-hmm. And I think that to be generous is to be willing to give of yourself in some way. What are your thoughts?
I think it's willingness. And I also think it's coupled with sacrifice, because to simply give something that's of no value to you mm-hmm. is a giveaway, but it's not being generous. Generosity to me implies that you're giving something that has value both to you and to the person that you're giving it to. And yeah, it can be money, but it can be much more than that.
Yeah. Well, I actually think generosity, the best kind of generosity, isn't what we give away. It's what we leave behind with somebody. Might be dignity. Might be connection. It might be a fuller heart. And I think that's where the secret is. I think generosity itself, if given well, it doesn't deplete, it multiplies.
There's a book that was very popular in the 1990s called The Road Less Traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And the author, M. Scott Peck, had a definition of love, which I think applies to what you're saying, that's always really stayed with me. And he said, love is the willingness to extend oneself for the sake of your own or someone else's growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're talking about.
It
a
truly
generous act leaves the recipient in a better place, not just, and again, it can be in terms of financial place, but in a better place mentally, emotionally, you know, more stable, more happy, more secure.
Fulfilling.
More fulfilled. Yeah.
It's fulfilling. I think it shows empathy. I think it shows an unconditional love, or maybe not love, but kindness. And we talk about, you know, and you've told some beautiful stories about kindness and passing it forward. But we don't always think about that. We think about that as generous, like you were saying, intangible things. I was in a medical crisis in my family, and I had a child that needed help. And I had gone everywhere, all over the place. Lots of people came and helped me and helped connect the dots or get me into a certain physician because I knew something was wrong with my son, but it was extremely complicated. It ended up being cellular. And so it's kind of like needed specialists. You were one of those people that connected me with somebody. The generosity that I'm thinking about now just took my breath away. There was a parent at Taylor, at the school that I worked at, as a public health nurse that I had been there for, and their child needed an IEP and certain things. And I remember one day they had come in, the mother had come in and was talking about her child, and she could see something was very wrong with me. And she asked me about it. And this was initially a few months before this one act of generosity. And I told her about it. She happened to be the chief pathologist at Children's Hospital in the area that I live. And she was like, you know, I think I can help you. And so she did the basic things, getting tissue samples from the different places that we've been. She was kind of one of the people that said, look, it's got to be cellular because kids don't have all these individual systems that start failing. And I ended up at NIH. She knew people at NIH. Ended up at NIH through a friend of yours. I mean, all these pieces came together. But we went for a second opinion, and we went to Emory. So Hunter and I were going to Emory. Lo and behold, like a day or two before, I get a call from this individual, this parent, this physician, that said, what flight are you on? And I told her my flight. And I said, why? Are you going to be in Atlanta? And she goes, well, I'm going with you.
Oh, wow.
She left her job. She had a husband. She had two children. She planted herself with me through 3 days of testing just to hold my hand. Not somebody I knew that well, except in that relationship at the school. We've become friends since. I was just taken back. Her time, her money, empathy that she gave to me. It was just beautiful and so unexpected.
That is a truly generous act.
It was unbelievable. I'll never forget it. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives me goosebumps thinking about it right now. I don't know that I would just jump on a plane and go to California to help somebody validate a diagnosis and get the right treatment plan.
Okay, so I know you would.
Okay.
Okay, and the reason I know you would, and for our listeners out here, she's so modest. I just emailed you the other day or texted you the other day because my daughter is having a surgical procedure when I'm out of town to see if you would be here. And you offered to move your trip. To visit your parents, to be there for my daughter. Like that act of generosity, plus your whole being, clearly triggered a desire to do reciprocal generosity because you are one of the most generous people.
Oh, thank you. But I've known y'all and I love Lindsay for a very long time.
I know. But a lot of people would not do that and wouldn't offer. I mean, you have plans. Fortunately, we've worked out, but you have plans. And yet you're the first to stand up and say, I'll change my plans to make it work for you. That's beautiful. That's why I love you.
Aw. Well, isn't that the generosity that matters?
It is. It is.
Giving of oneself, I think, in unexpected ways sometimes too.
I think that a lot of people stumble on that because they tend to view generosity as more transactional. I'll give something to you, but only if I think I'm going to get something in return. And that actually goes against the entire concept of what generosity is. And people also think of it as generosity is a zero-sum game. If I give you something, then I'm behind, and I can't be behind, so I can't give to you. I think it's the same notion that propels people in traffic when you put your blinker on to cut you off instead of let you in.
Yeah.
If I let you get ahead of me, you're ahead of me.
Why?
Why?
You know, that's why I think it's so nice to do this. And important, I should say, to do this podcast, because generosity is so much more. I think people should spotlight it more. Mm-hmm. And I know that the whole paying it forward on social media and just in general, people talking about it, the stories, I actually think that it did multiply. It was in somebody's head. It became a mindset. And I think we need to be cognizant of talking more about different ways in being generous in general.
Yeah, because I think when you're the recipient of a truly generous act, it makes you want to be generous in return. For me, I think one of the sort of hallmark acts of generosity that really affected my life was when I was working at a law firm many years ago. Mm-hmm. And I worked very closely with a partner that I had a lot of respect for. We had a great working relationship. And we were working on a case in Georgia. And we were flying home from visiting our client there. And on the flight home, he said to me, let me ask you a question. Do you really think that you want to be a partner in this firm? Do you think that this is where you want to be 5 years from now? And my immediate reaction was like, oh, my God, he's trying to tell me that I don't have a future, right? And he must have seen the expression on my face. He goes, no, it's not that. He said, it's just that much as I enjoy working with you, I just keep thinking you would be a great assistant U.S. attorney. And he said, I just think that's the job for you. And coincidentally, I had actually applied at the U.S. attorney's office, but I hadn't gotten an interview. The U.S. attorney's office in D.C. gets lots and lots of applicants. And so I said to him, well, you know, to be honest, I have thought about that. And he said, well, I'm friends with the U.S. attorney. Would you like me to call him for you? And the next day I got an interview. And just like, this was someone that I worked really well with. I was the associate assigned to his cases. He didn't have to do that.
No. And even not just him calling the U.S. attorney's office, his generosity in thought. Like,
exactly.
He was thinking about you and he shared his thoughts. And I think that is as beautiful as him picking up the phone and getting an interview for you,
exactly.
You know?
His concern for my future was best for me.
Yeah.
And sort of thinking about it. I mean, he took the time to notice me and think about what I might be best at and what might be best for me. That was really generous.
I think when you say that story, a word comes to mind that we don't usually associate with generosity, but it's generosity of curiosity. Putting yourself in someone, like wondering what they're thinking and what makes them tick and listening and getting, being curious about them and their environment and, you know, what they would benefit, not just benefit from, just being curious and giving somebody that attention and that time to care and to want to know about somebody. I know when I'm around somebody and that I've never known before and they're asking questions about me and wanting to know about my life, it's meaningful. Like I stop and think, wow, why would they want to know about me? I have a son that's the most curious individual I've ever known.
Yeah, he is.
He was visiting 2 weekends ago. And we had 10 people in the house. And I'm not kidding. At least 5 or more said something about how my son took the time to ask them and want to know like all these specifics and non-specific things about their life, like what they did, how they thought, all of that. And I think that that is a generous thing to do for someone. It's rewarding on both sides. You get to know somebody. And it's purposeful in a way as well as meaningful. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think it goes both ways. I think being present for someone and being truly focused on them and hearing what they have to say and seeing them for the person they are. But it's also being willing to share who you are with other people. Like a lot of us put up facades.
Vulnerability.
Vulnerability, right. I mean, when you're dealing with someone and you're never letting them get a glimpse of the real you, that's not a very generous way of relating.
Right.
It becomes much more generous when you open up a little bit. That's not saying that we all have to wear a heart on our sleeve or, you know, tell every sob story to every passerby. But in the relationships that matter, opening yourself up a little bit and letting someone see the real you, that's an act of generosity.
It's sharing.
Yeah.
It is important. Any other types of generosity that you can think about that maybe not be the norm?
Yeah, I know this is kind of a weird take on generosity, and it is not kind of the normal way of thinking about it. But I think artists and creative people are naturally generous. Taking that internal impulse and putting it out there for the world to see and sharing it, that's an act of real generosity. And I especially say that because, you know, my son's a musician. And it's really hard to be an artist. There's not a path to, like, making a high-powered living for however many Bruno Mars's or Taylor Swift's there are out there in the world. There's thousands of talented people who can't get any traction. And yet they still share their souls.
Yeah.
They share what they're feeling. They share their creative impulse. Artists, painters, writers. These are all people that are like putting something out into the universe for other people. I think that's actually an act of generosity.
I think it is too. You know, they don't know where the road's going to lead. You know, and it's hard to put something into something that you don't know where that road's going. And just to continually going blind doing that, it is generous. It's generous of your time. It's generous of your talent. And actually, I mean, it's generous in the way that you know, or you hope, I mean, your music, your art is touching somebody else.
Right.
And you might not be getting that in return, the financials or any of that, yet you are just kind of unconditionally giving something to somebody else.
Right.
I think
it's not
that's
transactional.
Huge. It's not.
Just purely a gift.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing about generosity is people who are not generous, it stands out like a sore thumb. It is such an obvious character flaw. Yeah. When you see someone who just can't get out of their own way to do something for someone else, the kind of people that walk through the door instead of holding it for you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, see someone handicapped on a subway and won't get up and give up their seat. That's just, you look at those people and you think, wow, I feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
I really do, because they're missing a lot of the beauty in life.
You know, I could talk about that for a while. I think one thing when you say that, talking about somebody that can't give or be generous enough, I think of situations where somebody can't apologize or say they're sorry. They can't do it. And I think people hold that tightly to themselves, not realizing what a gift it would be for both parties. And there are people that just can't. They can't apologize. Maybe ego, I'm not sure. But the other thing is also it's hard for people to forgive or accept forgiveness, but forgive in general. And so there's a generosity piece to that. Leads me to think about another category of generosity, which is in spirit.
Mm.
And I think about this over the last, 6 months. Because when I think about generosity of spirit, I can't help but think of holding space for people that think differently. Their ideology is just different. And it brings a lot of emotions to the table. And to be generous to somebody that might have a different opinion, especially political view, and not just shut them down and not want anything to do with them, you shouldn't do that, in my mind. I mean, that is, you need to be generous. I feel like there's a lot of value in being generous and holding space. You don't have to agree with somebody, but holding space for somebody. It's raw. It's really raw. But we could use more of that in the world right now.
I totally agree. I think what happens is that people become more concerned about validating themselves, validating what they're feeling or what they're thinking, than understanding and accepting that there could be a different point of view and validating someone else. It just seems to be impossible to do that. It actually isn't, because it's so easy to say we have to agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And yet we can't seem to do that anymore. You're wrong. You're wrong. I'm right. Instead of, okay, let's just agree to disagree. And that saying that is an act of generosity.
Yeah. I mean, I ran into somebody that literally said, you know what? I just had to separate myself from that person. This is their ideology. It's not mine. And this person was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Not physically. I mean, the character this individual had.
What becomes tricky in those situations, though, where you're talking about the conflict of views, is I may stand willing to give you the grace to have a different opinion than me, to be generous in my heart, in my spirit, and give you that space. But if you are not generous back, even though generosity isn't really transactional,
right,
it can become very frustrating and stifling to be on the other end of that. So I think we would all be wise to try to do that collectively for one another.
Right.
And just agree that we may have different views.
And I've seen both. You know, it is hard, but generosity of spirit is, that's one of the ones that you have to dig deep, I think.
Yep. And, you know, it's more than politics. It's also in some, you know, talk about spirit. Also, in some respect, in religion these days. I mean, there's a lot of conflict between people about religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is the greatest irony. If in that context, you can't be generous enough to accept someone else's different point of view, it kind of goes against the whole concept.
You see that in religious wars.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about generosity of self?
Oh, wow. That's a great.
That's another type.
That's another category. And I think we as women particularly, fall prey to not being generous enough with ourselves, taking the time to take care of yourself, indulging yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a week and a half ago, I think you know this, but I came back from a trip to Alaska and I was sick for like an entire month. I just didn't feel well. It took me a whole month to get over it. And I finally felt a little better. And I just kind of like I needed a massage. And I said to my husband, I don't have anything on my schedule today. I am going for a massage. And he said, oh, are you still not feeling well? Does your back hurt? Like, it's like, no, I just need to give this to myself today. Mm-hmm. It's been a rough month. I haven't felt well. I want to feel really good today.
Yeah.
I think we don't do that enough. We're not kind enough to ourselves. Or the flip side of that is we overindulge to make up for the fact that we're not on a sustained way being generous enough with ourselves to take care of ourselves.
Right.
Feeding ourselves well, getting adequate rest, giving ourselves little rewards during the day in terms of, you know, things that we want to do for ourselves.
I think when people talk about generosity of self, it seems indulgent, but it doesn't always have to be indulgent. But I think of, like, of course, I'm a woman and a wife and a mother. So when I think about times that I did that, and especially in the moment, no, not so much now, was a guilt. Like, why do we feel guilt over that? When I was in my 20s and 30s, so I had children young, well, not that young, at 27 and 29, but from then on until they were kind of able to be by themselves, you know, later in their early teens, I used to tell my kids, I would put a cartoon on or whatever. I had to have my hour of exercise every single day, and pretty much every day, five, six days a week. And whether that was a video, it was always in the house, you know, lifting weights, whatever. I needed that for myself. But I would tell the kids, okay, you've got to leave me. I'd put a timer on. I just need this. But there was not one time I didn't feel guilt about that. Like, I wasn't there spending my time with my children, or I was like, okay, don't bother mom for an hour. I need this. And I had so much guilt over it. I continued to do it because it's the only way I had that mindset and that healthy mind to be able to be generous later in other things. But I stole that time, mm-hmm. and I had guilt.
I did too. I also, you know, it took a lot. And this is a form of generosity too, which is trust. And in a marriage relationship, it's really important that you give your partner that kind of generosity, mm-hmm. right? Trust them to be able to do the things that maybe you usually do in the relationship. And I remember the first time that I decided to go away for a week, and it was actually for a church retreat. And we couldn't, we just didn't feel like we could take Harry. He was a baby then. And so my husband and I agreed that I would go and he would stay home. And it was really hard for me, not just because I felt guilty about going, but also it really was hard to garner the trust that he could handle the kid for the whole weekend. I will say, when I came home, this is funny. When I came home at the end of the weekend, the front door opens, Harry comes running down the path, you know, to the driveway. And I just see this weird thing on the side of his face. Like, it looked like a blue thing.
Uh-oh.
And my husband came running out of the house after, and he said, it's okay, he's not going to lose the eye. I was just like, so I had to further extend generosity and grace to not completely lose my cool that something had happened. He had actually been playing in the garage with a stick in his hand and fallen, and it
got
under the eye.
Well, it was generous of Dave to take that on. I mean, that was definitely both of you being generous to each other.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? And I think as women, sometimes we don't allow our spouses mm-hmm. to give us that generosity mm-hmm. or to ask it of them.
Yeah.
And actually, generosity works even when you have to ask for
right.
it. I need this from you.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. I may not have seen that you need that, but I stand ready yeah. and willing to give it to you.
I think in a spousal relationship, talking about generosity, and I've been married for a long time as well, is going back to that word of willingness. Like, what are we willing to do to meet the needs of our partner?
Mm-hmm.
And to sit in that and to think about that. I think a lot of marriages probably fall apart because they're not willing to meet each other's needs along the way. And it does take generosity because, I mean, you could be tired, and I'm talking about physical, emotional, just generosity in general of giving up yourself to somebody else.
It goes back to that notion that it's somehow a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
If I give to you, then I'm depleted.
Right.
And I can't do that unless you're going to give back to
yeah.
me. And marriage doesn't work that way. Right. It really, the marriage is its own separate entity, and you both have to contribute to it to make it grow. So you need to be generous to each other in order for that entity to be strong.
Like I said earlier, generosity given well doesn't deplete. It multiplies.
It multiplies. Exactly.
It really does.
And I think in that example, it's a perfect way of seeing that.
Yeah.
So how would you suggest that somebody cultivate their generosity?
I think start small. And I think also, like, do your own self-assessment of what you're willing to give of yourself and still stay whole or not be overwhelming for you. It can be, you know, always start at home. I think, you know, Mother Teresa said, love those first at home. Give of yourself first those at home. So I think that's an easy way to start, even with your spouse. Not even, your spouse, your neighbors. And I think, honestly, there's a snowball effect to generosity. So I think that it is so fulfilling and so rewarding. I really believe that when somebody starts doing it, they realize the generosity well-being connection. There's a science to it. Mm-hmm. Generosity fulfills the reward centers in the brain. It actually does. There's a science to it. And it releases serotonin and dopamine. So I think once somebody gets into the act of doing that more, it snowballs and they feel it. So it can be in small ways and it becomes bigger. It's very fulfilling. It's kind of addictive in some ways to be there for somebody else.
I would say if somebody were to try to start cultivating a more generous mindset, I would agree, start small. I would go back to the example of traffic.
That's a good one, actually. Great example.
Next time you see somebody putting a blinker on, be the person that stops and lets them cut in front of you.
Yeah.
And then when they wave to you, which people invariably do, you'll get that feeling of, I just did something nice and they noticed.
Yeah.
And so you do get a little something back for that.
Yeah.
Smile. When you're having a bad day and you feel miserable, it means a lot to smile at someone else. When you greet people, no matter what your own mood is, greet them with a smile. Give them the best version of you that you can muster.
It's infectious.
It is.
Smiles are infectious.
It's that rebounding effect.
Wonderful gift.
Yeah.
And actually, it also triggers those dopamine and serotonin hormones. Mm-hmm. That's why it's hard not to smile back. You know, it's that reward center.
Right.
It really is wonderful.
And that's a small way of cultivating a more open, generous mindset. And I think the third thing I would say is, you know, a lot of us are inclined to give money into our community. Find something that you wouldn't otherwise be inclined to give to. Make it really matter. Extend yourself a little bit in where you put yourself financially, where you put your money. Pick something that isn't like low-hanging fruit, right? It's always easy to give money to kids' school.
Right.
Right? We give money to our church. Yeah. But find something outside of that. Where so there's a real need that's identified, even if it's a small thing you're giving. Step out of the usual routine and make a contribution because you understand that it's needed and not because it matters to you because it's something that, you know, your kid's school rebounds to you.
Right. There is a group I'm a part of. It's a spiritual religious group. But anyway, so we meet throughout the year. I don't go as much as I should, but the one thing that I love that they do every year that I'm present for is an angel fund. And so walking into this holiday tea, everybody gives X amount of dollars. I think it's $5, and it's collected, and it's usually like $500 or $600. It's a lot of money. And that's exactly what is asked of them, is to keep that money in their purse or in their car. And when they see something that just moves them, not something they've thought about. It's not to be anything premeditated, to just give and to do that. And they come back the following year over the holidays and tell, yes.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of what you're saying. It's finding just something out of the ordinary that moves you and you just do it. You give.
It's a great way of cultivating generosity.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I would say is with your neighbors, I mean, we used to have an elderly neighbor across the street. He was in his 90s. Lovely guy. And the whole neighborhood would pitch in every time it snowed.
Yeah.
To shovel his driveway and shovel his sidewalk Sometimes he'd need little things done, you know. Those kinds of little things make a big difference.
Kinds of kindness.
They're kinds of kindness. They make a big difference to the recipient, and they will make a big difference to you because they will change the way you look at the world. And you start seeing it not as a zero-sum game, but as a community in which everything you give multiplies and rebounds to the benefit of all of us.
Well, I think that putting things like that out there, kindness, gratitude, generosity, wow, it's what the universe is about. It is a vibe that feeds on itself. And I think that that actually is a gift in life, for those things, the non-tangible things. That keeps me in the game. Those are the things. It's love, kindness, generosity, gratitude. What we've been talking about recently on this podcast, they're life-changing. Mm-hmm. And for people just to sit and think about it for a moment, to be present in their own thoughts, at a lot younger age than I am now, I did it earlier and I do it and it does become a part of you. But don't wait. For all those listeners, tell their, you know, be an example, like shoveling, you know, the neighbor's snow, and talk about it with your kids. Get them involved, because I do believe generosity is something that we need in this world a whole lot more at every single age, you know?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
To be generous without losing yourself, where is the line between generosity and self-sacrifice?
That is an excellent question, and actually really worth reflecting on, because an overdose of generosity is destructive, and it can actually turn you completely off to the whole concept of extending yourself for someone else. I think the key is it has to matter. If you're, as I said earlier, if you're giving away something that doesn't matter to you, it's just a throwaway. That's not generous. It may be beneficial to the person who receives it, but it's not generous. Generosity means it has to count. But if you become, you know, like the giving tree, where you're just giving, 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 and not keeping anything for yourself, who are you not being generous to? You. So you always have to be mindful of it. It's a balance. Give what you're capable of giving, but it has to be consistent with you living your life in a meaningful way.
When you think about generosity, and I think if given well, it's not depleting. And I think you need to really think, as Leslie Ann just spoke about in such a great way, I think you need to be self-reflective and make sure that you're not giving too much of yourself, and that it's something meaningful. The ego's not in it. I think setting ego aside and just following your gut and being there for somebody else and being generous in spirit and in time and in attention, those are important. I think also talking about financial giving, of course, you shouldn't just give to feel good about yourself financially if you can't do it. So I think in the finance aspect, people need to think about that. I think about elderly and how they're taken advantage of with all the commercials and so forth. And that worries me. Yeah, I think there's a boundary there.
Yeah, I would add one little piece to what I said. I think true generosity requires a kind of a holistic approach. If you're giving to the point that you are overly sacrificing, you're probably also, in some sense, smothering or inhibiting or impeding the recipient. So I think of a specific example that actually Marianne, you and I talked about yesterday. We were in a position where we gave a lot to someone, not just financially, but time and attention. But, you know, there's a point at which someone needs to know that they can stand on their own two feet. And if you keep going past that point, it stops being generous and it starts being a little egotistical and self-indulgent.
You know, that's one of the things I talking about the individual, that not only did you give time and attention, you gave security, housing, shelter, food, you gave everything. And one of the things I love about you and Dave doing that is you left ego at the door. It had nothing to do with ego. It wasn't It had nothing to do with ego. It was solely for that person, not because of how it made you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
And I love listening.
Well, thank you for saying that.
It's really true.
Yeah.
Can we teach generosity without telling people to give? And what does that kind of teaching look like in your own life?
I think by example, not asking or stating or talking about it, but being there for somebody. I think that it's so rewarding to be seen and to be heard that when somebody is given that, it resonates in a way that allows them to want to be like that for someone else.
Yeah, I think just people are always watching other people. And as a parent, your children are always watching you. And everything you do is a life lesson for them. And so showing up, noticing people, treating people with dignity and respect, that's kind of the underpinning of generosity. It's sort of the pre-financial part of it. And I know one thing I was taught at church, which really has always resonated with me, when you see somebody who's, you know, even somebody on the street, let's say, begging for money, right? Don't just walk past them and ignore them. I always look at them and say, I'm so sorry, I can't help you today. It's just that little gift of dignity. And that's sort of the beginning phase of generosity. It might extend later. And I've done this, and you know, in presence of my children, where outside of a Starbucks, and you know, it's happened many times. It used to happen when I worked with Robert in Georgetown.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Starbucks downstairs. There would be people out, you know, can you give me money? Can you give me money? I will not give money. There's a lot of reasons why I won't. However, I will say, I will buy you lunch. Can you tell me what you would like? And I know that my kids do that now.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's one step at a time, but it basically, to me, it boils down to treating everyone with dignity and respect. That's the first step in recognizing that we all need each other and that we need to be present for each other. And it can start with just that little thing. And then maybe at some point it has to extend beyond that.